Are you a 30 to 50 year old who grew up watching Roseanne on TV?
Are you a Gen Z and only know her as that crazy bitch that got canceled?
You might think you know the true story of Roseanne Barr and one of the most successful and progressive shows of its time.
Guess what? You don't. Only we do.
Did you know Roseanne featured the first gay marriage on TV? What about the first lesbian kiss, the first reoccurring gay character, and entire episodes on racism, unions, and the real meaning of Thanksgiving?
We cover all of this and more in our new podcast, Chicken Shirt, the world's only Roseanne rewatch.
Hosted by me, Sarah Gabrielli.
And me, Alvaro Chavez.
Follow us at Chicken Shirt Podcast and catch new episodes every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts. Have you heard of Olivia, the travel company for lesbians and LGBTQ plus women? You know what they say, life is better in flip-flops. And when you're a lesbian or LGBTQ plus woman, you want to be able to go on vacation, put your feet up, and be your unique self. Olivia Travel creates full takeovers of their cruise, resort, riverboat, and adventure vacations, so you can kiss who you want to kiss without a care in the world. You've never felt relaxation like this. Discover Olivia for yourself at Olivia.com or through the link in our show notes and save $100 on your next Olivia booking when you use promo code CRUISING.
Hey, you. Save the date and bring your butt to for my 80th birthday party. Sunday, November 13th, 2022, 2 p.m. at Lizard's Liquid Lounge in Chicago. Love you, Linda.
This is the text Linda Barcelo sent out to all of her friends and family, inviting them to her 80th birthday celebration.
Perfect. It's the perfect message.
Very, very straightforward, because that's who I am. Yeah, bring your butt and join me.
Lizard's Liquid Lounge, where Linda is having her party, is not just any Irish pub. Before it was Lizard Lounge, it was Lost and Found, Chicago's longest continuously operating lesbian bar. Lost and Found, or L&F to some of its regulars, first opened in 1965 and ran for another 43 years. Linda started frequenting Lost and Found around 1985, and it's been a special place to her ever since.
Then I went down to Lost and Found on a St. Patrick's Day and just started hanging out there and saw all my old friends and said, this is comfortable and I'm happy here. And I've always just felt very happy there.
After many happy years at Lost and Found, the owner, Ava Allen, sold the bar to a woman named Liz in 2008. That's when it became Lizard's Liquid Lounge.
We knew that she had been looking for somebody to buy it. And so Liz would come in with her entourage, and they'd just come into the bar and kind of socialize and made friends with us and stuff like that. But when it was finally decided that Liz was going to buy the bar, she had kind of established a friendship with all of us. So it wasn't a hard transition.
Lizard's Lounge is still a hangout spot for some of Lost and Found's former regulars. A few of the old bartenders still work at Lizard's, and Linda and some of the other L&F ladies attend dart league and bingo at the bar. And it was Liz, the new owner, who encouraged Linda to celebrate her 80th there.
So I started thinking about it, and I said, you know, Liz, I says, I haven't been come out to the bar, I said, because of my legs and stuff like that. And I says, not that many people know me anymore. She says, well, just think about it. I says, okay, you're right. A lot of people have been asking me, what am I doing? Okay, let's do it. And so I just sent everybody a text message.
We first connected with Linda a few weeks before her party. Our trip to Chicago happened to fall on her busy birthday weekend, but she was happy to include us.
Did you think twice about inviting us and, like, letting us come? It's so generous of you to invite us and invite us today.
Why wouldn't I?
Birthday. I don't know. Maybe you want to be with just people that you know.
No, I'm not that person. I am not. I'm always trying to bring my friends together. So, no, I absolutely want to do that. I didn't know there was going to be three of it, which I'm grateful for. One or three. I thought you were going to be by yourself. I had no idea what to expect. I really didn't.
Not Not only did Linda invite us to her birthday party, she also welcomed us into her home to do this interview the following morning on her actual birthday.
Cheers to you, to the 80th birthday.
Oh, yeah, today is my actual birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you.
This is Cruising, a podcast about the last lesbian bars in the U.S. My name is Sarah Gabrielli, and I'm traveling to each one of them with my two friends and chosen family. This episode, we're taking you back in time to Lost and Found.
Oh my God, there's so much food.
It's 3 p.m. on Sunday, November 13th, and Lizard Lounge is packed with Linda's family and friends. There are fresh coats of red and yellow paint on the walls and punk decor picked out by the owner, Liz.
So all this is your style?
This, The dripping bloods and skulls.
The animal head.
This is Liz.
Do you remember what the decor was before you moved?
Lots of sports stuff and beer stuff. And everything was this, see these, like fake brick? Everything was this brown. And we just painted over all this, like fake paneling, wood and brick, and we painted over it.
Lost and Found was first opened by a woman named Shirley Christensen back in 1965.
It was Shirley's bar. Shirley was the one that started the bar, and Abe was her girlfriend.
Then in 1973, Ava Allen, Shirley's partner, started running the bar with her. And Ava quickly became the face of Lost and Found.
She was very pretty, very, very pretty. She had dark hair. She was long-legged, thin.
This is Barb, another Lost and Found regular from back in the day.
She had an air about her, an aristocratical kind of air. Yet when she opened her mouth, this little Southern girl came out.
Ava was a cocktail waitress downtown, and she used to wear the little shorty costumes and everything.
She was pretty a wild woman, too. She used to dance on the bar, and she loved doing those Egyptian dances behind the bar.
She was the main attraction of the bar. And Shirley was her backup. You know, she took care of everything. She was the boss, but she felt very comfortable putting Ava up front.
When Shirley passed away from cancer in 1986, Ava inherited the bar.
I always got the feeling that she kind of felt trapped, like she had to stay there. But she also loved it, too, for the attention. And who wouldn't, you know?
Ava would stick around for another two-plus decades before selling the bar to Liz in 2008. Ava's in her 80s now, retired, and living in Florida. But just because someone is living does not mean we can get an interview with them. Linda confirmed this.
So I called Ava and asked her if she wanted to do this podcast. She says, I've been out of that place for 15 years. I don't want to relive it. I'm done.
We heard the same thing about Ava over and over again. She's not necessarily shy, but...
No, she never talked to you. That's part of her air, you know, privacy, privacy, privacy.
Very, very private person. Only a certain people were allowed to be in her world, and luckily I was one of them. So I don't want to say too much. I don't want to jeopardize my seat.
I wish I could say that we defied all odds and landed an exclusive interview with Ava, but unfortunately, that is not the case.
I don't know what Ava's story is. Ava's Ava. She is, and she'll probably always be a mystery to you.
And we have to respect that. Many lesbians of Ava's generation are very private people. Not so long ago, privacy was a necessary means of survival for gay people in the U.S. For example, for 43 years, you had to get buzzed in to Lost and Found.
Oh, yeah, you had to knock on the door, you had to be buzzed in, and they checked your ID religiously.
This process was a staple of the bar, even through the early 2000s until it closed in 2008.
It was right on a corner, you had to step up two or three steps, and then buzz the buzzer.
This is Tracy Baim.
You know, the glass was darkened, if there even was glass. I don't remember. I think there was, so they could see out, but I couldn't see in. I think the first few times my heart would beat to see, are they going to let me in? And what am I going to say?
Tracy is a journalist and the co-founder of Windy City Times, Chicago's LGBTQ newspaper since 1985.
I have like almost 39 years of experience going in the bars, covering the bars, and everything else about LGBTQ community in Chicago. I experienced them, I think, in a different way than people that might have been there to meet somebody or, you know, just socialize purely. I did have a weird seat in the community, a catbird seat in terms of having my camera and always having a purpose in being places. So it made it easier just to talk to people. And, you know, it still was hard to ask people to take their photos, especially older closeted women or women who just didn't want to be in the limelight. Some for good reasons, custody and jobs and stuff, but others for just tradition. Like this is, I'm not out in the universe. And this was before the internet, but even just being in a gay paper could have repercussions. And I always asked. I would never just like pose, you know, take my camera and just pose it at the bar. So I got a lot of no's there. And I just really stopped asking a lot of the old timers.
Tracy herself could be out at her job writing for the gay newspapers. I mean, you were kind of outed just by taking that gig to begin with. But outside of specifically gay publications, that was a different story.
In college, I had a little bit of paternalism from my professors, meaning protection. Like they were like, you really can't be out and be a journalist. There isn't a precedent for this. They didn't know it, but there were maybe a few mainstream openly gay journalists at the time, Randy Schultz in San Francisco being the most visible one. But they were right, right? Like partly it was being gay was being still covered in the mainstream as like we're all pedophiles and it's this horrible dark thing. And there was a lot of bias in the mainstream media. But also the mainstream media has this notion that if you're any step removed from cisgender white male, you got to be real careful that your identity can get in the way of the journalism, right? So like women can't cover certain issues. Certainly people of color have always been ostracized and were in mainstream journalism. So, I mean, I was very, very out in college. There was no way I could go back in after having experienced that. So I was like, well, this is a dilemma. And a very seriously one. And I did attempt suicide in college. And it was, you know, lots of existential crisis you go through in college. I was not successful at that. I spent a week in the hospital and I came out of it and I was in poetry class during that semester. They made me go to therapy. But I was in poetry class that semester. And it turned out I had this amazing professor who himself was closeted. His name was Mark Doty. At the time, he was married to a woman in the English department. But he wrote on my my poem about what I had just done. And it said, I am not lying. He wrote, it gets better. Now, he didn't have to say any more than that for me to know that he was telling me he was gay and it's going to get better. Here was this closeted gay man in Des Moines, Iowa, who is now a world-renowned gay poet, Mark Doty, very famous now, who was basically helping me in ways he can never really know. And I was like, okay, well, I can do whatever I want with my life now. This was a pivot point for me to say, I can write anything I want anytime. I didn't even know there was a gay media at the time. I knew there was a feminist media. So I was like, I got to get a job at Ms. Magazine or I'll do my own thing. And that's what I thought.
Before Windy City Times, Chicago actually did have another gay newspaper. It was called Gay Life and it was founded in 1976.
So when I graduated, my mother, you know, told me there was a gay newspaper in Chicago. And I was like, what? So I went, that's when I went to interview there and I got the job and never looked back. Like no matter what the economic sacrifices or the other sacrifices were, I have felt lucky from day one that I happened to be able to do my career out. I was 21 years old when I started at Gay Life Newspaper and 22 when I co-founded Windy City Times the next year.
And the lesbian bar scene wove its way through Tracy's entire career.
So it's weird because the bars were so central to the community, just going and saying these people were hanging out at Lost and Found or Sidetrack or whatever was the story. Like you would just run a spread of photos from the weekend at the bars. And then sometimes it was Halloween, sometimes it was something, St. Patrick's Day, whatever. And then a ton of it was events, benefits. So whatever I was doing at the bars, most of the time I was covering, but I might just be covering that it's a night out at the bar. It was the way to cover the LGBTQ community that there was almost no other way to do it, right? You just didn't go to, you know, downtown and take pictures of gay people, right? So the bars, softball, church, sports in general, church, and like the choral groups, the bands, these were the things to cover in the community. And the bars were the biggest. They were the most, you know, places people were congregating on a daily basis. So yeah, that in and of itself was what we were doing, was just covering community. And it showed faces of who we were, right? Not closeted behind a fern, like in 60 Minutes in the 60s, right? We were out and proud, and that was part of the story.
Lost and Found was just one of a number of lesbian bars on the scene at the time. But according to Linda, it had a distinct reputation.
It used to be called Menopause Manor. Because it's where all the old ladies went when they retired or got in relationships or whatever. It was where the old ladies went. Nobody wanted to go there.
And then, I guess, once you reached a certain age, that was the place to be.
It was a very clicky place. Yeah, you didn't sit in certain seats. And there was one lady there called Wally. Wally was, like, considered the mayor of lesbian land.
And what would Wally do?
Just sit there, and everybody would cater to her. She was very manly. She drove a taxi cab. I think at one time they even had her name on the back of one of the bar stools.
I never sat at the bar because I was always worried I would possibly be sitting in somebody's stool that would come in and want that stool. So I pretty much mostly stood at Lost and Found so that I didn't go across any hidden boundaries I didn't know about.
You wouldn't have found much diversity amongst the ladies at Lost and Found.
98% white. Partly location, partly just who went, right? Like, yeah, I definitely saw women of color there. Sometimes it might be from the softball team or the darts league, or if there was a biracial couple, a partner. But I would say, maybe I'll be generous and say 95%. But, and most of the bars, I would say, had huge swings, like one way or the other. Not that many were very good about being for the representation of the demographics of Chicago, which right now are about third, a third, a third, Black, Latino, and white, and then certainly a lot of Asian as well. But the biggest split is those three, and almost no bars or events or parties in the community have ever been very representational of that.
When I first came in, it was not a problem getting through the door. And the bartender, I think was Ava at the time. I think she was bartending herself. But it was the patrons were very off-putting and cold. And I could never figure out if it was because I'm African-American or because I'm not a sports enthusiast. And I believe it was just a sports enthusiast thing. Most of the lesbian bars back in the day were all sports bar related.
This is Michelle. If you can't tell from the background noise, we met her at Linda's party.
I was born and raised here over on the south side of the city and couldn't wait to get away from here.
Michelle is extremely charismatic, and we quickly became buds that day. We sat down at the bar, and she shared a bit of her coming out story, as I tend to coax out of people if you haven't noticed by now.
The thing was, I actually joined the military because I had realized when I was 17 years old, I was gay. And I was afraid because I only knew about gays from my dad, who was homophobic. So I thought, what can I do? What could I do? What could I do? And I'm like, well, if gays can't join the military, I should join the military. Then I won't run into any gay people and I'll be fine. Really? That's wrong.
So Michelle joined the Navy.
But then in one class, there was this woman who walked in 4 foot nothing almost. Probably 4'11", because that's the shortest. She's sitting in the back of the classroom with her feet up on a desk, wearing dark sunglasses in class. And they kept telling her to take the sunglasses off, and she might turn her head, and then she'd ignore them. And then she'd finally take it off if they threatened to come back there and take them off for her. And I was like, ooh, who is she? I got to meet her. And so after class, I ran to go meet her, and she was, like, so uninterested in me, it wasn't even funny. Of course, she was, engaged to be married. She was engaged. And so I actually did hit on her, not thinking, like, oh, man, if this goes south, you're out. You're on a dishonorable discharge. I actually hit on her, and she was kind and said, I'm sorry, I'm not like that. And I'm like, fine. But we kept hanging out. And then I noticed, but I didn't think anything of it, that she was hanging out more with me and our friends and less with her fiance, who was also in the military with us. And so one day she disappeared. And she had been talking about, like, going AWOL. Me and our other friends, we split up and went to go find her, searching all day long. And I was over by the helipad at Great Lakes Military Academy and heard somebody crying. And it's her. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing out here? And she goes, she's been having these nightmares. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And she goes, she was supposed to be a surgical nurse. And so that's all she ever wanted to do. And so she said, well, I'm in the OR getting the equipment together, and they wheel in the patient, and it's somebody I know. And I'm like, oh, my God, is it your dad? Because he was in the Navy. No. Oh, my God, is it your brother? He was also in the Navy at the time. No. Is it your other brother? No. Your mom? No. Your grandma? Somebody's random child, niece, nephew, cousin, third time removed. She said, no. And I'm like, then who is it? You. And I was like, what? And I assured her nothing was going to happen like that. And I was like, you can't just run away. Let's go. Our friends are all worried about you. And we started dating from then. And she told her fiance, bye. Now, the thing is, he could have turned us in and didn't. Our friends, one of them might have been, like, homophobic. They didn't. It was fine.
Michelle's on the younger side of the LNF ladies. She was in her 30s when she started frequenting the bar around 1994. And despite the less than warm welcome she received on her first visit, she stuck around, popping into the bar every so often.
I usually only came, like, as an afterthought from another bar because they were open later.
Perhaps in part, it was Ava who kept Michelle coming back.
She had dark hair, beautiful eyes. I love you, Ava!
Ava!
And she was very nice. She was very kind. I used to hit on her, openly hit on her all the time, and she would just, like, be gracious about her. No.
Have you heard of Olivia, the travel company for lesbians and LGBTQ plus women? You know what they say. Life is short and the world is wide. And when you're a lesbian or LGBTQ plus woman, you want to be able to go on an adventure, have some fun, and be your unique self. Olivia Travel creates full takeovers of their cruise, resort, riverboat, and adventure vacations so you can zipline or scuba dive knowing you're with your own community. Discover Olivia for yourself at olivia.com or through the link in our show notes. Save $100 on your next Olivia booking with promo code CRUISING. Years before Michelle or Linda started frequenting Lost and Found, before Tracy started covering Chicago's lesbian bar scene, a woman named Barb Swanson walked into Lost and Found for the first time. It was fall of 1973. Her son had been born that past April, and she turned 25 in July.
I was going through a really nasty separation with my husband. I worked in a beauty shop for my mother, and one of my customers kept inviting me to go out for drinks. And finally, I did go out for drinks with her. And that's where she took me, was to the Lost and Found. And when I went in at first, I didn't realize that there was anything any different than a regular bar. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me that some of these guys were girls. But I was received with open arms, respected. And when I was invited back again, I came back again.
So what made someone like Barb go back for a second time?
God, curiosity. I had never seen anything like this. I am not putting anybody down, gay people or straight people, but it would be like if you were around a gay community your whole life and then you were taken into a straight community. It would be like going to a circus, and you either wanted to see more or you didn't want any part of it at all. So going into this bar with these people was like going to a circus. And I wanted to see more, and I heard bad things. People started telling me, but I didn't see bad things there. I only saw good people. And even after I figured out what was going on in there, I don't know. I felt they were very warm and they were caring.
Now, people might have been particularly nice to Barb because she was a total hottie.
Well, at that time, I could send you a picture of myself. I had very long red hair. I was very thin and I was very young.
If that wasn't enough, she also knew how to do herself up.
My mother made my sister and I go to beauty school. At that time, I could apprentice under her. I only had to go to school for the theory and the test. That was it. So she forced us to go to beauty school, but I always hated sitting around waiting for customers. You know, that was not my gig.
But a better gig eventually came her way through a lost and found customer named Kay Price.
She's blonde, always tinted her hair blonde. She was most comfortable in her fishing clothes. Loved to go fishing. Paddle pusher she wore a lot. Very laid back. She'd sit and watch. She would watch the conversation to see how it was going where. She was talked to. She would talk back, absolutely, you know. Or if she knew something, she would join in the conversation. But she wasn't a big initiator.
In 1977, Kay was hiring a stylist at her company, and she went to Barb.
The interview was weird. You know, how long you been hairdressing? How did you learn? Did you ever use this kind of iron? Did you ever do that? And finally, she says, how do you feel about death? I said, well, I stay as far away from it as possible, you know. And we laughed a little bit. And then she told me what she did.
Kay was in the funeral business. They did hairdressing and styling for funeral homes in the Chicago area.
I went, oh, and you want me to do this? And she said, yeah. And I said, oh, I don't know if I can do this. She says, well, let's make a little deal. She says, why don't you travel with me for a couple of weeks? After a couple of weeks, if you don't like it, you can say goodbye and I'll have no feelings. If I don't think you cut the mustard, I'll say goodbye and you won't have any hurt feelings. And I said, okay. She started me out. She wanted me to feel the bodies. Okay. So she wanted me to hold the hand and put the nail polish on. So I watched her do it the first couple of times and maybe the third body we did that day. She says, okay, I'm going to go in the office and get a cup of coffee. She says, you polish the nails. And she left me alone in there. So I got the polish out and I put something underneath so I wouldn't spill it. And I grabbed the hand. I dropped that hand and I went running into Kay. I said, she's not dead. She's alive. And she says, no, Barbara, that lady's been embalmed. She's dead. I said, she has a pulse. Well, I showed her how I held it. I was feeling my own pulse through the body, you know, stuff like that. And people would ask me questions. Do they ever sit up on you? I said, honey, I've been doing this for 42 years. If one had ever sat up on me, that would have been my last day. So that was my head start in that business.
When Barb started working for Kay, she was living with her son Anthony at her mom's house.
And then, I don't know, it was probably about 6-7 months down the road when Kay said, how would you like to live in this neighborhood? There's a nice nursery school there. There's room for you guys. You won't be alone. I'll be there. My mother's driving me crazy.
Kay was also living with her mom at the time.
Her mother did drive her crazy. Her mother was the originator of the business. But then when she got older, she moved into Kay's house and took it over. You know, Kay didn't have a house anymore. And of course, she was queen bee of the business. So she just interfered in everything. Kay did not have a life of her own. She said, I have this apartment. She said, if you would move in with me, we could split the expenses. My secretary could be daycare for a while till you got things straightened out. and you could put enough money away to buy a car.
So Barb agreed.
Well, I started having more car trouble earlier than we expected. And she said, come on, let's go get you a car. This was 1985, because I remember what year the car was. So she took me to her dealer, and I'm looking around, and I'm looking around, because they drove Lincolns and Cadillacs, you know. They were quite wealthy. And she says, do you want to take one for a test ride? And I said, I can't afford no Cadillac. She says, don't worry about it. You can afford a Cadillac. She said, because you've been with me so many months now. She said, all the girls are getting a raise, not just you. All of you are getting a raise. And I said, okay. And the guy says, took me for a test ride. I said, well, what's to say? So that was my first car. I drove out of the showroom with a 1985 blazing red Cadillac. And my email was She Lion. So I had She Lion license plates.
Barb and Kay's relationship was nuanced.
God, I don't know that there was never any commitment of any kind. She was older than me. She was 14, almost 15 years older than me. And she always said, you are your own person. You do what you want. You do what you feel. You don't ever want to live here anymore. You just let me know. And you're young. That's what she told me. You're young. Go.
When Barb and Kay first started living together, they were just close friends.
First of all, it started out with just caring for each other. I remember I had a fight with somebody, and it was the hugging and the caring. And when we got the apartment together, Anthony and I were sleeping in a twin bed in one bedroom. And eventually Kay said, you can come in here. I'm not going to bite you, you know. And we went from there, and then it was touchy-feely, and, you know, it just went from there. And I have to say, out of the 14 years, I'll bet you half of that was intimate.
Barb never hid her relationship with Kay from her son, Anthony.
I think it was somewhere around when he was 10 years old. I sat him down. You know how you give the sex talk and you don't want to do it? And I sat him down and I told him, you know, mom's friends and everybody, they're a little different and this. And he says, Mom, I know all about it. They're gay. I'm like, how did you know? He says, well, we talk at school and I hear them talk. I hear you talk. I've heard you say so-and-so's gay. I didn't know what it meant, so I found out. So I just told him, I said, you know that I love you and Kay loves you. Yes. I said, do you know that I love Kay, that she's very good to me, and that she loves me? He said, yes. I said, the fact that we share a room together, we're closer than most people. I said, there's different kinds of love. I said, Mom wants to tell you that even though Kay and I are both women, we love each other like we're married. He goes, oh, I know all about that, Mom. You know, he was very mad. My kid is something else. He is the 6'7" gentle lion. You know, he's the one holding the little sheep in his hand. And he loves everybody. Yeah, he knows it and he don't care.
And Barb had just as easy of a time coming out to her mom.
Oh, I need to tell you, too, that my mother loved the girls. When we went partying, she came right with us. My mother never raised us to be prejudiced against anything. Well, she just, you know, I guess the first time we asked questions, especially maybe about a black person, and she'd say, well, you know, people come in all different kinds of colors, but we all have one heart and two arms and two legs and our own brains, but we're different that way. She says, I remember her saying this, look at the cows. Are all the cows spots in the same place? You know, stuff like that.
Barb's mom, Arlene, was a single parent for much of Barb and her siblings' childhood.
When I was 10 years old, my stepfather passed away, a work accident. And so I was the oldest. I was 10. My brother was 8. My sister was 5. So she raised us alone in this beauty shop, you know, on the beauty shop, shall I say. And one night a week, she would go out. And she was a roller skater. She was a waltz queen at the Hub roller skating rink in Illinois. When I told her what was happening, I told my mom, I said, this woman, she has invited me to a bar, and I found out that it's all women. And now Rose, my other friend, who was so anti-gay, you know, that woman's trying to make a hit on you, and blah, blah, blah. And my mom says, well, how do you feel about it? I said, well, they're nice to me there. I don't have to worry about anything. I don't have to worry about being some guy putting his hand up my dress or getting drunk and sloppy. I go home by myself. I'm fine, you know. So she says, well, then you do what you're comfortable with.
The first time Arlene went to Lost and Found was Ava's birthday. Ava always hosted these big costume birthday parties, and Arlene had come over to help Barb get ready.
And she says, well, can't I come to the party? And I said, it's a public place, and you're a woman, why not? She had on a real fancy blouse, and she had short hair, but she had her hair all poked up, and she had ears. And she had a long cigarette holder and white gloves. And that was the first time she was exposed to the Lost and Found. She had a ball. She had a ball.
That was the beginning of Arlene's relationships with the Lost and Found ladies.
She didn't travel with us on a weekly or even a monthly basis, but if she heard something was going on, and a couple of times she would say, you know, I am so tired of being in the house. Take me out. That was her relationship. She did get to the point where she became good friends with some of these girls, but they looked at her like a mom, not like as a friend or a lover. That's what I want to say. She was kind of the mom image. And I know that they called her on personal things sometimes, and she would talk with them because she was just that way. She was just that way.
I asked Barb if she had any favorite memories of going out with her mom.
Well, this little short bald-headed man kept coming over and asking my mother to dance, and she was a hoot. She'd say, sure, honey, let's go. She's dancing with him. Finally, she says, I think I better go home. Can you take me out to the car? He says, this guy's in love with me. He thinks I'm a man in drag. Because my mom was heavy set. And he thought that she was a guy in drag. She had all her makeup on and her hair. And she, when she walked out the door, she walked out of the bandbox. She always was exquisite. Never went without her makeup and her But I could see where, you know, in a gay bar, he might think she was an older man in drag.
By the 1990s, Arlene was getting older and sicker. Her lungs were bad, and she was losing her sight, among other things.
She was in one of those three-wheeled scooters or a wheelchair, whatever we had, and she was heavy, and she let her hair grow out, and was gray and in a ponytail. She just wasn't herself.
So in June of 1997, Arlene moved back in with Barb so she could take care of her. This was about 5 months before Arlene would eventually pass.
And this lady called and says, hey, we're having our yearly party. Are we going to see you? We haven't seen you in a long time. I hadn't been to like 3 or 4 parties, you know, 3 or 4 years. And I said, well, you know, I've got my mother here. Bring her with. We haven't seen her either. I said, she's in the wheelchair. She says, I don't care. So I dolled my mother up. You know, she wouldn't let me do her hair, so I stuck a cowboy hat on her head, put her makeup on. She's dressed up. Got her to the car. I was able to take her little cart apart. Got her there. And when we pulled up, there was two guys standing there in the driveway telling people where to park. I had never seen them before because I didn't know any of the men friends. And he goes, "So, Arlene, how are you?" That was my mother. And she says, "How do you know me?" He says, "We know all about you." I guess she told her what kind of car I had.
Barb's friend had made sure Arlene would be treated like a guest of honor, even going as far as to tell the men directing parking what kind of car Barb drove so they could be ready for Arlene's arrival.
They opened the door, put her scooter together, and said, "Come on, we're going to have a good time." I never saw my mother for 2 hours. They whisked her away into the boathouse, gave her some cocktails. She was singing on the microphone. She was a hoot.
Arlene had a young soul. She could hang with these people much younger and queerer than her. And it's clear she was ahead of her time in many ways, ways that had great influence on her daughter. So I asked Barb if she thought her mom's progressive values and the way she was raised had any impact on her own openness and fluidity surrounding sexuality.
Yes, I believe you're right. My mom was a very big influence on me. You know, I think every one of us is born with the capability of being with a man or a woman.
Living in this life for as long as I did, you become attracted. Certain women, their ways, their actions, their mannerisms, you become attracted to them. And once you're attracted to somebody, you're curious as to their personal life. What is it like to have dinner with them? What is it like to cuddle with them? You know?
Barb's only serious lesbian relationship was with Kay. They lived together throughout the late 70s and early 80s before eventually breaking up.
Now that my husband's gone, I'll say this. When I left Kay, it was hard for me, but it was kind of the age difference. She no longer wanted to go out or do things. I was going to parties by myself. And we had no intimate life in quite a few years. And she said, okay. And she did what she said. But she was angry. She was hurt. And it did put a wedge between us. She fired me. And we had a contract. And she fired me illegally. And then it was years later when I was working for the construction company. I got a call from her one day, in the middle of the day. Now, she's been angry at me and pissed at me for a couple of years now. Wouldn't talk to me. It was just other than hello, goodbye, and whatever. And I answer the phone at work. AJ Maggio Company, Barbara. I knew her voice right away. I said, yeah. She says, Kay. I says, I know. She said, what are you doing after work? I said, I'm going home. This is not Kay to talk to me like this. She said, could you do me a favor? I said, sure, what do you need? She says, could you just stop by Lutheran General Hospital? I said, okay, why? She said, I had a heart attack and they're keeping me here. They want to do surgery. She says, and I have all these calls scheduled for myself tomorrow. And you're the only one I trust to take over the business. He hasn't talked to me in 3 years. I said, okay. So I went to the hospital. I got her book. I told my boss I have to take an emergency 2-week vacation. I wasn't going to quit my job. I didn't know it was going to happen. So I took the 2-week vacation and I worked for her and she had her surgery and she came home. And she was feeling better. And then she started asking me, do you want to do a call on your way home? Because I got off work about 4 o'clock. I pretty much set my own hours there. So I'd do a call or two. Then it was weekends. And then a year or so down the road, she said, you still like working in the funeral homes? I said, yeah. She said, are you ready to take over the business? I said, yeah. So we went from there. It took a few years because she had a hard time letting go. The business was her baby because she never had anybody else in her life again after I left. And that weighed heavy on me. I always thought that was my fault. But it wasn't. I know it wasn't. She could have let other people in. She didn't.
Barb, on the other hand, had an easier time letting other people in after things ended badly with Kay. You might have noticed a few minutes ago, she mentioned a husband, Jim.
Well, when we were dating and we decided first to live together, he'd met a couple of my friends. And I was as honest as I could be with him. I said, I have a past. You have a past. I said, maybe if we found out more about each other, we wouldn't like each other or whatever. He says, I know the way you treat me. He says, I love you. I think you're beautiful. I don't care what your past is. Your past and my past are the past. We're just going for the future.
Barb did a lot of the interview with Jim sitting by her side, but she would avoid certain subjects until he left the room, mostly her relationship with Kay.
The reason I don't really talk about certain things in front of him is that it might be hard for him to digest. I'm sure he knows. I'm sure he knows. But because we've never openly talked about me being in bed with another woman, I don't think he wants to hear that. He doesn't care about that.
Barb and Jim might not talk too much about that chapter of her life, but many of the friendships Barb made during her time with Kay and at Lost and Found are still going strong.
They are my friends. I am their friend, and I won't give up my friendship with my gay friends for any other community or any other whatever. They helped me through life.
Some of them helped me raise my son, babysat for me, and whatever.
Today, Jim and Barb live in Florida.
There is a lady here. Her name is Toni. I bought my first house from her when my son was 2 years old, and we just became kind of friends. And she owned a restaurant down the street from the LNF called the Ducky Wucky. So everybody ate in there. And with postcards, seeing each other at a party or whatever, we've remained friends all these years.
Toni is the reason they moved to Florida from California a few years ago.
When Jim and I said we had to get out of California, it was just too bad there. Just come here to Florida. Here we are. So I have a friend here that I've known for 45 years. And like I said, she was a customer at the LNF for years and years.
Linda has also maintained some of her LNF friendships for going on 40 years now, some of whom were at her 80th birthday party at the Lizard Lounge back in Chicago. Not surprisingly, Linda has a lot of friends.
There was 50 people that didn't come. I'm not kidding you. I've got a whole list of all these people. Oh, I'm sickly.
But so many others had shown up to celebrate her. It was rather overwhelming, both emotionally and physically.
I was just having a hard time yesterday. I had to just sit. You know, please just give me a place to sit. And so I just kind of operated from a sitting position. I felt bad. I hope people didn't feel like I was rejecting them or something like that. But I tried to get around as much as I could. But it wasn't as painful as it has been, but it was still very painful. It's just standing.
A highlight of Linda's party, though, was some of her family showing up to surprise her. Her son, Jeff, his wife, Kim, and their son, Tyler, weren't supposed to make it at all, as far as Linda knew.
I didn't know what to say. I was kind of flabbergasted because I really believed. See, now Tyler is going to be going to a school to become an air traffic control person. She's in the process now of leaving Salt Lake City to go and live in Oklahoma for 4 months while he's going to school. And Jeff says, well, I'm not going to be there for your party. And he says, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and help Tyler pack and stuff like that. I had no reason not to believe him, you know.
When did you realize that they were here?
When they walked in the door.
At the bar?
Yeah. And when they walked in, I was like, oh, my God. I can't believe you're all here. It was just wonderful.
A lot of things came together to make that day so special for Linda. Her family surprising her, reconnecting with old friends, and all under the roof of a bar she's called home for 40 years now. We were lucky to have witnessed it.
When I looked out over that sea of people just looking at me with this look of love, I was like, oh, my God. I can't even tell you what a feeling it was. It's like I wish my eyes were a camera. I would love to have had a picture of everybody there instead of just me with a cake, you know? It's like looking out over the sea of people that were my friends, that I love, that I have a special meaning for each one of them. And to have my family next to me, oh my God. I could have died right that day and never be happier in my life.
Cruising is independently reported and produced by a small but mighty team of three. Story producer and social media manager Rachel Karp, line producer and resident road trip driver Jen McGinnity, and story producer and audio engineer me, Sarah Gabrielli. Our theme song is by Joey Freeman. This episode was sponsored by Olivia Travel. You can find us at our website, cruisingpod.com, on social media at cruisingpod, and at patreon.com/cruisingpod. Listen to Cruising wherever you get your podcasts.